The content of this program is for the blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, May 2019. So let's go ahead and get started. On the cover of this edition is the anniversary issue, actually, and it's going to have an exclusive interview with Diddy where he opens his heart by Dream Hampton, in addition to Quincy, Justin, Christian, Chance, Delilah, and Jesse Combs. One love. And we're also going to discuss 49 years of empowering Black women. Let's talk. We've got the power. It's such a joy to present our power issue for so many reasons. First, this month marks the 49th anniversary of Essence. What a milestone. We feel an incredible sense of pride to continue our mission of speaking to, serving, and embracing you. That in itself is a cause for celebration. May is also the month that we honor mothers. Our choice to highlight Sean Diddy Combs and his family, daughters Chance, Delilah, and Jesse, who join him on the cover. Sons Christian, Justin, and Quincy, and his mother Janice, is a bold one. During the 6 months since the untimely passing of his former partner and dear friend Kim Porter, his heart has expanded even wider as he adjusts to becoming a full-time hands-on dad. It means the world that he trusts us to share his ever-evolving story. Along with spotlighting the mother-daughter bond between Tanya Lewis Lee and Sachel Lee, we talk about the power of Black wealth while offering keys to success. Speaking of power, we close with a few words from CBS This Morning co-anchor and author Gail King, who discusses being in the room where it happens. I'm proud to say that we enlisted 60 Black female creatives this month, including photographer Dana Scruggs, who shot the cover of this edition. We also showcase a sampling of our beautiful covers on the years. What life continues to teach me is that the real power is love. As you read this issue, my hope is that you feel what our team felt as we were creating it. We are a global family. We love. We are Essence. One love to you all. Love, Moana Liu. She's the Chief Content and Creative Officer of Essence Magazine. The first story that we're going to cover is from the Scenes edition. Screen Her Story. Time's Up challenges Hollywood to hire more female directors, and we're applauding those who are camera ready. At the Sundance Film Festival this past January, the women of Time's Up partnered with researchers from the University of Southern California's Annenberg Inclusion Initiative to ask Hollywood gatekeepers to participate in the number 4% challenge. Inspired by a report that found only 4% of the top 1,200 grossing films of the last decade were directed by women. The hashtag 4% challenge asks film industry members to commit to collaborating with a female director on a feature film within the next 18 months. According to Time's Up, women-directed projects are often more inclusive and welcoming than those helmed by men. And the hope is for this initiative to humanize production processes so that all groups can thrive at work in safe contexts. Creators like Ava DuVernay, Issa Rae, and Shonda Rhimes have always given female directors an opportunity to shine on their hit TV shows. But it's nice to see that the real or the rest of Hollywood is starting to join them. Last month, Queen Latifah announced her Queen Collective, a program supporting and distributing films from women of color, says Latifah. We all just want our stories told authentically and acknowledged. My hope is that this will further inspire entertainment and advertising industry stakeholders to back multicultural female directors and their voices. Then there's the gauntlet that award-winning actress Regina King threw down on the night she won her Golden Globe. I'm going to use my platform right now to say in the next 2 years, everything that I produce is 50% women. And the next article that we're going to cover is continuing on with the scene edition, Black Operatives. So the HBO adaptation of Native Son has some tricks up the sleeve as it modernizes Richard Wright's groundbreaking 1940 offering. The biggest surprise is the main character, Bigger Thomas himself. Cinema has never shown audiences such an African American alt culture poster boy having green hair, wearing black painted fingernails and a motorcycle jacket, and digging on an old black punk bands like Bad Brains and Death. Maybe only a powerhouse talent could be bold enough to drop Native Son's protest novel Pretensions and make over Bigger as a sympathetic Afro-punk. So HBO called Susan Lori Parks. In her hands, all things are possible. As one of the earliest works of required reading in the Black literary canon, the story is well known. Bigger is a 20-year-old casualty of Chicago poverty, scores a job with a rich white family of woke liberals, and ends up on the run from the law after an accidental homicide leads to an intentional one. The most important thing for me was humanity, says Parks. Big and Mary are trying to have a friendship, one that's very different than in 1940. Mary friends him on social media. That mattered to me, that we have time to get to know Mary and see Big and Mary together before the horrible tragedy. The accident and all the weight of everything awful in the world comes crashing down. Parks first put her spin on another tour de force in 2005, penning the screenplay for ABC's adaptation of the beloved Zora Neale Hurston novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. An undergrad student of James Baldwin at Mount Holyoke College in the 80s. Parks turned those lessons into a career as a playwright, snagging a Pulitzer Prize for her drama Top Dog, Underdog in 2002. Her play White Noise recently wrapped at New York City's Public Theater. On the heels of the film adaptation of Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk, Parks and first-time director Rasheed Johnson used Native Son to once again raise issues of black male agency in white supremacist American society. Big is really living his life out of the box, Parks says. He wants to be his own person, so we're just exploring that. What does it mean to be authentically black? How much freedom do we have in this world, really? He's a brother trying to find his way. Baldwin's critique of Bigger was started as a long-standing rift with Wright back in the day. But was he right? James Baldwin was my writing teacher, so I'm just doing what my teacher told me, Parks says with a laugh. I think Wright did everything right, and now that we look the privilege of being in 2019, we can take another look and say, what do we need now? I think that seeing Big and Mary as people in the fullness of their humanity allows us to see the fullness of our humanity. And this article was written by Miles Marshall Lewis, and she is a pop culture critic and author based in New York City. So next we're going to cover issues, 10 things that we're talking about. First thing that we're talking about is faith on display. For an estimated 3.5 million Muslim Americans, May 6th through June the 6th marks the religious observance of Ramadan. In honor of it, author Amina Muhammad Dickens has partnered with the Please Touch Museum in Philadelphia to bring her children's book, Bashira and the Amazing Bean Pie, to life as a play. I am grateful to be able to showcase the diversity of cultures within Islam and the diversity of religions among us Black folk, Muhammad Dickens says. The production, which runs from May the 11th to June the 5th, centers on faith, friendship, and representation. See it if you're in the city of brotherly love. So the second issue that we're talking about is designs. This month, African meets Scandinavia in a new collection at home goods retail giant IKEA. So in a first of its kind collaboration, the Sweden-based company teamed up with 10 African designers to create overalls. Offerings include unique kitchenware, furniture, accessories, and textiles inspired by life on the continent, from South Africa to Senegal. The line is available in stores now. It actually started on May 1st. So number three of what we're talking about is Education for All. Beginning with the 2019 through 20 academic year, students in America's paradise will be eligible for free college tuition. The University of Virgin Islands is the first HBCU to adopt legislation making a post-secondary education free for residents of the territory. Supporters of the law believe it will be a game changer for families and will produce a larger and more educated workforce. Number four of what we're talking about is scientific breakthrough. Given the impressive results from a clinical trial at the National Institutes of Health, researchers believe they are on the way to finding a cure for thousands of people battling sickle cell anemia. So in a groundbreaking advance, gene replacement therapy utilized a virus to add a modified gene to sickle cell patients' cells. The patients later saw their once defective cells replaced by healthy red blood cells. Number five of what we're talking about is a push for inclusion. The future of filmmaking will look significantly more diverse if AT&T has its way. The telecom company has started a new Believe Los Angeles program with grassroots organization Brotherhood Crusade. The partnership will focus on developing entertainment employment opportunities with an emphasis on millennials interested in becoming filmmakers. Number six, quote, I'm the only person here of color, okay? I am a mother too. I have a son, and I care as much for my son as y'all care for y'all's. But my son doesn't walk the same path as yours does. So this debate deserves more time, end quote. And that was from Arkansas State Senator Stephanie Flowers during a heated debate over the state's Stand Your Ground gun laws. Number seven. Honoring our history. The places where our ancestors were laid to rest have been neglected for too long. Representatives A. Donald McEachum, Democrat from Virginia, and Alma S. Adams, Democrat from North Carolina, hope to change that with the African American Burial Grounds Network Act. The legislation would provide federal support to Black burial sites and offer information, technical help, and grants to aid in the restoration of these treasured spaces. Number eight, endless love. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King embodied the idea that beside every great man is a great woman. Soon, their inspiring love story will be symbolized in a bronze sculpture to be displayed in Boston Common Park. African American conceptual artist Hank Willis Thomas is the creative force behind the 20-foot-high memorial that depicts intertwined arms modeled after the king's. Number nine, dial your rep. Since last year, Senators Cory Booker, Democrat from New Jersey, Kamala Harris, Democrat from California, and Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, have been pushing the Justice for Victims of Lynching Act, which would add murder by lynching to the federal list of hate crimes. The bill, which passed anonymously in the Senate, now needs the approval of the House. Call your representative today and tell him or her it's time to pass this important measure. And finally, number 10 of what we're talking about is level up. Hashtag Black Girl Magic has made its way to the highest ranks of North Carolina's Supreme Court. In March, former District Court Judge and Associate Justice Cherry Beasley was sworn in as a Chief Justice, making her the first Black woman to be appointed to the position. In her new role, Beasley heads the judicial branch, which includes six associate justices. Beasley hopes her service inspires young people within the state. Continuing on with issues on my mind, what Madame taught us, or Madam taught us, on the 100-year anniversary of the death of Madam C.J. Walker, one of America's earliest Black female millionaires, her great-granddaughter, Alila Bundles, reflects on her legacy. So for more than 40 years, I've had the privilege of writing books, articles, and speeches about my great-great-grandmother, Madam C.J. Walker, the entrepreneur and philanthropist who died 100 years ago this month. On my journey, I've learned about the fierce sisterhood she shared with women like journalist Ida B. Wells and educator Mary McLeod Bethune. As she traveled, Madam Walker was often asked the secret to her success. How had she gone from washing other people's laundry to being a boss with a sales force of several thousand agents in less than a decade? There's no royal flower strain road to success, and if there is, I have not found it. She told a reporter in 1919, "For what success I have obtained is the result of many sleepless nights and real hard work." She also famously said, "I got my start by giving myself a start." She knew that diligence alone was not sufficient, so she learned to harness the kind of personal power that would motivate others. When she arrived at Booker T. Washington's National Negro Business League Convention in Chicago in 1912, without a formal invitation, she requested a few minutes to share her story. On the final day, when she realized that Washington was not going to give her the chance to address the delegates, she took matters into her own hands. As the last banker completed his report, she rose from her seat, looked toward Washington, and said, "Surely, you are not going to shut the door in my face. I am a woman who came from the cotton fields of the South. From there, I was promoted to the wash tub. Then I was promoted to the cook kitchen. And from there, I promoted myself into the business of manufacturing hair goods and preparations. I have built my own factory on my own ground." At that moment, Washington, then considered the most politically influential Black man in America, witnessed Madam Walker's power. He could not ignore her charisma and the effect she had on his audience. The next year, he invited her back as a keynote speaker. Madam Walker had taken a risk. She had embraced her strength and used it strategically. She had stood up when there were many forces telling her, a Black woman, to sit down and remain silent. Her resolve came in part from her desire to boost other women. "I am not merely satisfied in making money for myself, for I am endeavoring to provide employment for hundreds of women of my race," she once said. She believed entrepreneurship could provide a path to prosperity for African Americans who faced racist Jim Crow laws that shut them out of jobs and stripped them of their rights. Her own early life had been bleak. She was born Sarah Breedlove in December 1867 on the same Delta, Louisiana plantation where her parents and older siblings had been enslaved before the Civil War. She was orphaned at 7 and married at 14 to escape her abusive brother-in-law. A mother in at the age of 17, she was widowed at 20 and went to work as a laundress in St. Louis until she was 38. Along the way, she had the good fortune to be mentored by the women of St. Paul African Methodist Episcopal Church. They helped her envision herself as something other than an impoverished washerwoman. As a member of the choir and the missionary society, she observed the impact of women working collectively on behalf of other women. At her first Madam C.J. Walker Beauty Culturist Convention in 1917, she awarded prizes to the women who had sold the most products or whose local Walker clubs had raised the most money for charitable causes. At the end of the convention, the delegates sent a telegram to President Woodrow Wilson, urging him to support legislation to make lynching a federal crime. "I want my agents to feel that their first duty is to humanity," Madam Walker announced at her second annual convention. "I shall expect to find my agents taking the lead not only in operating a successful business, but in every movement in the interests of our colored citizenship. I have come to believe that Madam Walker began to see the sale of her wonderful hair grower and glossing as a means to a more ambitious end. It's surely significant that she became a millionaire and a pioneer of what is now the multi-billion dollar international hair care and cosmetics industry. Her products were innovative and revolutionary at a time when few brands addressed the hair care and scalp health needs of Black women. But she saw that her clients' most pressing concerns transcended hair. Education and financial opportunities were even more scarce. Her story remains relevant because she used her wealth and influence to make a difference as an educator, a patron of the arts, an advocate for women, and a political activist. Madam Walker was also a marketing genius with a knack for identifying talented leaders and cultivating a skilled executive team. A diploma from the Layla College of Beauty Culture, named for her daughter, Alayla Walker, was a credential for the side hustle that allowed generations of Black women to buy real estate, support community organizations, and pay college tuition for their children. In her will, she bequeathed $100,000, which in today's dollars, it would be $1.4 million, to Black schools, institutions, individuals, and causes, including $5,000 to the NAACP's Anti-Lynching Fund. I'm grateful that her legacy is thriving with the Madam C.J. Walker Beauty Culture Hair Care line. At Villa Leroy, her Irvington, New York mansion, which will become a think tank for women entrepreneurs of color, and at the Madam Walker Legacy Center, a national historic landmark in Indianapolis. As we commemorate this centennial anniversary of Madam Walker's death, I am amazed that she is inspiring a new generation. In every possible way, the deck was stacked against her, just as it remains stacked against us. But she discovered her power and claimed it, and then brought others into the fold. That is her lasting lesson. The family biz. Vicki Phelps Chancellor never dreamed she'd one day be an entrepreneur. Now she's a successful franchisee. So long before I owned McDonald's restaurants, I saw women role models in business. Two of my aunts were hairstylists who had their own shops in my home state of Pennsylvania. They showed me that women could be entrepreneurs, control their lives, and produce revenue to take care of themselves and their families. My mother died when I was 10, and my older brother Ronald raised me and my siblings. We didn't have much money, but we had a lot of love, which gave me the confidence that I could do anything. After promising my grandfather, James, I would go to college, I became the first in my family to receive a degree. post-college, I would go to, or post-college, I taught high school in Rochester, New York. One colleague there would often compliment me, saying I had such original ideas. He suggested that I go into business. I left teaching and entered corporate America, taking executive sales positions at Del Monte, Johnson & Johnson, and other companies. At Sara Lee Socks, I moved into marketing and was promoted to senior management. The first firm paid for me to get an MBA at Wake Forest University. Being in corporate environments taught me how to network and be structured and disciplined. I set goals and achieved them. This was all preparing me for McDonald's. My husband, David, comes from an entrepreneurial family, and he read about franchise programs. He applied to be a McDonald's owner operator and was approved. And he would come home talking about what a wonderful time he was having as a trainee. He asked me to consider learning the business. The company okayed it. An African-American general manager was gracious in helping me understand the food or the fast food industry. I did everything from cooking to maintenance to scheduling. I was gaining insight into running a profitable business, and I loved it. Our first restaurant purchased in 2004 is dear to my heart. It's located on Martin Luther King Drive in Atlanta. Today, we have 7 restaurants in the metro region, which are with combined sales of $15 million per year. We have about 500 employees, 2/3 of them women, and 65% of the staff is Black. The best part, interacting with people. Often in our industry, you are providing individuals with their first job, or you may be helping a woman going through a difficult time take care of her children. I have been fortunate to be mentored by other operators, and there are affinity networks for Black and women operators that also provide support. In February, I made history as the first person of color elected to chair at McDonald's Operators National Advertising Fund. Many communities know their operators, some of whom are the second and third generation. My family hopes to continue that legacy. My employees call me a role model. Seeing me lets them know they can do this too. And it looks like we're going to stop right there because we run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.